Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
All right, let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. I want you to check us out on iTunes as we continue to dissect, digest, and offer some perspective on the 2015-16 college basketball season. Later in this program, we will be joined by Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga. But first, there's some things right now that are piquing my curiosity.
One, two, three, four, five, hey!
John's five questions.
First question from over the weekend in college basketball. Is Syracuse back? My answer, absolutely. The Orange made a major statement by winning the Battle for Atlantis tournament in the Bahamas. Syracuse's biggest strength right now, the fact that they have two fifth-year seniors in the backcourt in Michael Binajay and Trevor Cooney. That's 10 combined years of college experience, and Binajay has went from somebody a couple years ago that was an afterthought to somebody right now who is playing like a first-round pick. Another thing to love about Syracuse, one of the least appreciated players in the country in terms of freshmen, in Tyler Lydon. Buy stock in Tyler Lydon. Buy stock in him right now. This guy was not coming into the ACC or Syracuse with the type of cachet that other first-year players enjoyed, but Tyler Lydon, to me, has been the difference for Syracuse right now. When you think about the Orange, you think about great three-point shooting. And how's this for a stat? Syracuse has made 63 three-point shots in its first six games of the season. The Orange made 155 in all of last year. At worst case, Syracuse, in my opinion, should be 12-1 entering ACC play. This week, they're home against Wisconsin on Wednesday as part of the ACC Big Ten Challenge, and then they will play at Georgetown on Saturday. The fly in the ointment, though, for Syracuse, Jim Boeheim will have to serve a 9-game suspension at the start of ACC play. So for all the momentum the Orange are gaining right now, there will be a transition at the end of the month. But the question, is Syracuse back? My answer is absolutely. Question number two. Who was the most impressive team of the weekend? For me, it's the Xavier Musketeers. And Xavier has been dominant to start the season. The Musketeers sent the message 2 weeks ago when they had a 16-point road victory at Michigan. But the Musketeers went through the Advocare Invitational in Orlando like a chainsaw through butter. Right now, Xavier looks like the Big East top challenger to Villanova. And for me, the biggest thing that makes Xavier different from other teams in this conference, the balance that the Musketeers exude each time they take the floor. Xavier beat Dayton by 29 points on Sunday and had eight separate players score between 8 and 14 points. Another thing to look forward to, if you're enjoying watching Xavier, the Musketeers are going to continue to be challenged before Big East play. They still have to play Cincinnati in the crosstown shootout. They will also host Auburn at the Cintas Center, and they have a road game at ACC upstart Wake Forest. The big difference to me in Xavier this year versus last year. Last year, Xavier had a more traditional front court with Jalen Reynolds and Matt Stainbrook as a space eater at the five. This year, Trayvon Blewett is the mismatch issue for opponents at power forward. He extends the defense, and he was a really good small forward last year for Xavier as a freshman, but he is an elite power forward for the Musketeers this year as a sophomore. Question number three, which teams are still a mystery in college basketball? To me, it's Louisville and Pittsburgh. Both teams are undefeated, but the question to me is, who have these teams played? Louisville beat a solid St. Louis team on Saturday night at the Barclays Center, but the weight class for the Cards will go up significantly this week as Louisville and Rick Pitino head to East Lansing to take on Tom Izzo and Michigan State. And again, as far as Pittsburgh goes, the Panthers are undefeated, and the Panthers will have two chances this week to prove themselves. Pittsburgh will host Purdue as part of the ACC Big Ten Challenge, and then play a neutral site game against Duquesne on Friday night. You may say, well, Duquesne obviously isn't at the level of Purdue, but Duquesne has already beaten a Big Ten team, Penn State, by 26 points this season. Question number four, how loaded is the Big 12? Exceptionally loaded. especially in the top half of the conference. When you look at the Big 12 right now in terms of the top half of the league, there's Kansas, there's Iowa State, there's Oklahoma, there's West Virginia, and there's Baylor. Iowa State and Oklahoma look like bona fide Elite Eight caliber teams. We know Kansas is going to be there at the end. They've won 11 consecutive Big 12 regular season titles under Bill Self, and I believe this firmly right now. With Kansas adding Sheck Diallo last week, and when the word came down that the NCAA had granted Sheck Diallo the opportunity to play starting on December 1st. To me, the Jayhawks separated themselves from the pack as the team to beat to win the national championship. I think when you look at this Kansas team, you've got veteran guards in Frank Mason and Wayne Selden, along with Devontae Graham, who has made this team better off the bounce because he's playing alongside Frank Mason right now in a dual point guard attack. You also have experienced front court players in Perry Ellis and, of course, Jamari Traylor. And now you add Sheck Diallo, the hardest playing freshman and potentially player in all of college basketball. Somebody asked me, what does Sheck Diallo play like? My response, like a great white shark with blood in the water. And what can you say about West Virginia? The defensive performance that the Mountaineers put on Friday night in Las Vegas against San Diego State was something that will be remembered for a very long time. These are the numbers for the Aztecs against West Virginia on Friday night in Vegas. San Diego shot 34.9% from the field. They didn't make a three-point shot, and they had assist-to-turnover ratio of 3-21. Press Virginia? You better believe it. And what can we say about Baylor? Baylor is going to Baylor, and I mean that in a positive way. Baylor's four starters, not counting Lester Medford, and their other four starters are Al Freeman, Torian Prince, Rico Gathers, and Jonathan Motley, are all averaging a minimum of 13 points and 4 rebounds a game. Baylor has had a way under Scott Drew of annually replenishing talent. This team has star power in its starting lineup, and the question will be, can Lester Medford stay healthy and run Scott Drew's team like he needs it to be run? But Baylor right now looking like it has four potential all-league players in its starting lineup. And the final question right now in our five questions after the weekend, is it time to go Jack Nicholson in A Few Good Men as Colonel Nathan Jessup and order a code red on Ohio State? My quick answer, absolutely. Ohio State is 2-3 after losing to Memphis last Friday in Florida. The Buckeyes will host Virginia on Tuesday as part of the ACC Big Ten Challenge, and they still have to travel to UConn before they play in the Big Ten, and they also will play a neutral site game against Kentucky on December 19th at the Barclays Center as part of the CBS Sports Classic. To me, the Buckeyes have a legitimate chance to enter Big Ten play, okay, with 6 losses. That is something you do not say every year. When we return, we will be joined by Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga. I'm John Rothstein. You're listening to the College Hoops Today podcast. The season is underway, and it's been awesome so far. Great action across the country, so if you're looking to go to games, need to check out SeatGeek, the mobile app that turns your phone into tickets for your favorite sports team. SeatGeek is my go-to for all game tickets. SeatGeek is so easy to use and completely different from other ticket sites. SeatGeek pulls the ticket data from all those other ticket sales sites into one place to save you time. Best part is it shows you the full price of the ticket up front, never hides any fees, and usually has lower prices than the other ticket sites. SeatGeek grades every ticket on value, and SeatGeek is backed by 100% guarantee. My listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the free SeatGeek app. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter promo code HOOPS. SeatGeek will then send you $20 once you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app and enter promo code HOOPS today. All right, John Rothstein back here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Miami has been one of the hotter teams to start this college basketball season, and on the line right now is the head coach of the Hurricanes. He is Jim Larrañaga. And coach, are you where you expected to be right now a few weeks into the season?
Well, I think too much is paid attention to records and where your rankings are. We look more at our numbers offensively and defensively to determine whether we're happy where we are. And we're very happy with where we are offensively right now. We get a lot of production. We have a lot of balance in our offensive attack. But defensively, we have a long ways to go. We need to improve our defense and rebounding if we're going to be the kind of team that can compete for an ACC championship.
Coach, you lost the hard-fought game a few days ago to Northeastern, a team that plays in CAA, and you were a member of that league when you were at George Mason. How have you seen mid-major basketball evolve since you led George Mason to the Final Four 9.5 years ago in 2006?
Well, I think there's been a great emphasis on the balance that there is in college basketball. But I was telling my coaches today, there is a huge difference in how you coach at the ACC level as compared to the CAA level. And this is what I mean by that. When you're in the ACC and you bring in some new players, especially freshmen, that you're trying to get involved. You're trying to bring them along because they might be very key factors in your race in conference play. And it's so important that you win almost all your games in the non-conference because when you get to the league, you're not going to be able to run through your league, like we were able to do it at George Mason a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So in actuality, at the mid-major level, you can afford to lose a few games in November and December and still know you can compete for your conference championship. And you're not going to be hurt so much by those losses in November and December come March when the selection committee is choosing the field. Whereas what we have found at Miami in the ACC, you kind of expect it to beat everybody. You're supposed to almost like go undefeated, and that's not reasonable, especially when you have young guys that you're trying to break in and get them ready for very, very tough conference play.
You know, Coach, a few years ago you led Miami to an ACC regular season and tournament title. That was in 2013. You were also named National Coach of the Year. How does the joy of the accomplishments you had that season compare to the joy you felt when you took George Mason to the Final Four in 2006?
Well, I just love coaching. I love every year. Every year presents different circumstances, and it's a heck of a lot more fun when you win a lot of games and you win championships, and it was great fun getting to the Final Four in 2006. Nothing can compare to those memories. But that was then, and then in the ACC, doing it at Miami was tremendous as well. A great group of guys working very, very hard and basically accomplishing goals that many people said were impossible. In fact, a lot of my friends said, hey, why would you go to the ACC? You're never going to be able to beat Carolina or Duke. You're never going to be able to win an ACC regular season or tournament championship. And the other thing is that you're never going to be able to draw really good crowds to Bank United Center. I don't know if you know this, John, or if your listeners know it. We're sold out for every game this season.
No, I know that. I know that's unbelievable.
So we've accomplished an awful lot. It's very exciting for me and my staff to try to not only maintain that, but build upon it and again, compete with the top teams in the ACC and in the country.
Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. You know, Coach, we've talked about the 2013 team that won an ACC regular season and tournament title with Shane Larkin at the helm. How does the chemical makeup of that team compare to the one you're coaching right now?
Well, the real strength of that 2013 championship team was we had terrific guard play, and we were huge up front, so we could really manhandle people on the boards. This year's team is much more of a finesse team, much more of a shooting, scoring type team than that 2013 squad. But hopefully we can improve at the defensive end of the floor and make a run like that team did, because I think we're capable. But one thing is different, much, much different, is there's four new teams in our league that weren't in the conference in 2013. We now have Louisville, Notre Dame, Pittsburgh, and Syracuse. So the challenge in the ACC is even far greater.
What's the toughest part about going through this league as a head coach?
Winning. It's hard winning. It doesn't matter who you play. I mean, the national rankings really do not give the ACC the kind of recognition it deserves. And a lot of people say we're the best basketball league in America, but it's even more difficult than that because it's not just the league. You're expected to play great teams outside your league. You just look at the schedule like Duke plays or Carolina plays or like we're playing. We just finished playing Butler and Utah and Mississippi State, three high major programs, two in the top 20, and now we've got Florida coming in here. We've got a very, very difficult non-conference schedule on top of a hugely challenging ACC schedule.
You know, Coach, well, if you're going to go through a schedule like that, you need to be talented. You also need to be experienced. And after the 2013 season, you took a pair of transfers in Angel Rodriguez and Sheldon McClellan, who sat out a year but are now flourishing as fifth-year seniors. When you were deciding how you were going to rebuild Miami's program, how important was it for you to be old and experienced?
Yeah, I think that's huge because Miami is not one of those destinations of we've had great tradition like Carolina, Duke, Louisville, Michigan State, even Florida under Billy Donovan. You know, there are certain schools that can recruit the McDonald's All-Americans. And if you recruit one of the top 25 players in the country, you have a chance to be very good at his position because he's that darn good. For us to compete with a terrific freshman or sophomore, someone who's one and done or two and done, we're better off getting an older guy who may not have been quite as highly touted coming out of high school. Maybe he wasn't in the top 50 or even in the top 100, like a Tanya Jakiri. He wasn't in the top 100, yet he's able to compete at a very, very high level. And now with Angel and Sheldon, transfers, fifth-year guys, 22 years old, they're able to compete with the best players in the country because they are older, they have experience, and they have a great deal of confidence in themselves.
You know, Coach, those two are obviously the known commodities in your backcourt, but to me, watching your team play, the biggest difference between your team this season and last has been Jaquan Newton. I mean, how unsung is he a presence for your team moving forward because of the burst and the energy that he's provided in reserve?
Well, Jaquan is very different than Angel or Sheldon, and he's a really attack guy. He really goes to the rim very, very hard. He can make all different kinds of layups. He's shooting his free throws at a much higher rate this year, which is very, very good for us. He's playing better and better defense. He's sharing the ball. So he is basically doing what we expect all our players to do, to make a quantum jump from freshman year to sophomore year, and he's done that.
Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga joining John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Miami, one of the hotter teams in the country to start the season. Now, Jaquan Newton in some ways was the Pied Piper coach in terms of recruiting high school kids because he opted for Miami over several high-level programs. You've recently added two other high-level prospects for next year. Because of that momentum, do you feel like you've turned a corner in recruiting and now can recruit the best high school players in the country on a regular basis?
Well, it's only 1 year. I mean, Jaquan got it started. He was a top 50 player in the country. Bruce Brown is a top 30 guy. DeJuan Ewell is in top 25, top 20. So we're heading in that direction. We're not anywhere near where some of the programs in our league are. But it's nice that we have been able to recruit at that level and not get beat out every single time. What we're going to need to do now is turn the really good recruiting into really good basketball teams where our team is successful on the court. I think there's a lot of high school players out there, even college players who watch us, who love our style of play. They see the freedom that we give our guards. They see the improvement of our big guys, and they like what they see. And by that, they start to show greater and greater interest in our program. So hopefully our success in the recruiting arena will continue.
You've mentioned a couple of times that you have to get better defensively and you have to get better on the glass to be where you hope to be in March and potentially April. Who specifically on your team are you looking at when you label those types of deficiencies right now?
Well, it's really about a team effort. Every individual is responsible for contributing at the defensive end and especially rebounding. And it starts with our point guards, with Angel Rodriguez and Jaquan Newton putting good pressure on the ball handler. It's our wingmen, Davon Reed, Sheldon McClellan, James Palmer. Those guys have to do a great job on a lot of times the shooters on the other team. And we haven't been able to stop the best player. It doesn't matter if he's a two-guard or a three-man or a four-man. We haven't been able to shut down the other team's best offensive threat, and that's what we need to do. We need to, if a guy is averaging 20 points a game, we need to hold him to 15. If a guy is averaging 15 a game, we need to hold him to 10.
Got it.
We can't allow these guys who are averaging 15 to get 20 or guys averaging 20 to get 24. That's just not good defense. And that priority for our guys right now is stop your man, make him miss shots, and then rebound the ball.
Final thing for me, Coach. March will be the 10-year anniversary of when you took George Mason to the Final Four. How often do you think about going back, but this time as the head coach of Miami?
Well, I don't know what you mean about going back to George Mason.
No, going back to the Final Four.
Oh, I think about that every day. No, when we got to the Final Four at George Mason, we ended up losing to Florida, that great team that Billy Donovan had that won two straight national championships. But I look at that tape when we lost to Florida, and I think to myself, you know, if we made some adjustments a little bit better, we might have won that game. And how good would it be to be able to do that at Miami? Some of the things that people said we weren't going to be able to do, well, we've beaten Duke 3 out of 5. We've beaten North Carolina 4 out of 7. We've won the ACC regular season. We've won the tournament. We've made it to the Sweet 16. We're selling out crowds. How about adding a Final Four appearance and a national championship to our resume? Wouldn't that be great? And those are things everybody thought was impossible, but I think we dream big, and I think dreams do come true.
You know, Coach, it's funny. I've talked to coaches who have went to the Final Four about this. When you go as a team and you're coaching in the Final Four, is it hard to enjoy the event when you go back because the experience has been altered because you once were in it coaching?
Yeah, I've missed a number of Final Fours since then because I was really down about us not advancing in the NCAA tournament or even not making the NCAA tournament. And one of the good things last year was we advanced to the finals of the NIT, and then I had a good excuse why I wasn't going to the Final Four. But every year, starting long before the season ever begins, we dream about how good we could be if everything falls into place. You need to be good, you need to be lucky, you need to stay healthy, and you need your players to buy in and embrace the vision that you have. I'm very fortunate. I've got a great group of guys here, but it is very, very challenging for them. Everybody wants to start. Everybody wants to play 40 minutes a game and be all-conference and all-American and NBA draft choice, and that's not realistic, but we are driving our players and demanding of them to be the best that they can be.
Well, Coach, it's been a lot of fun to cover. I look forward to keeping in touch with you along the way, and best of luck moving forward. Stay healthy, and we'll be in touch.
Well, thanks, John. Thanks for all your texts and best wishes.
All right, John Rothstein back here on the College Hoops Today podcast. We'd like to thank Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga for popping on. Also, want you to send in right now your questions on Twitter to be asked, and we will read them here on the podcast. Just hit me at John Rothstein. That's J-O-N. Time now, though, for some nuggets.
Five good nuggets.
Five.
Six.
No, five. But you were close.
Nugget number one. UCLA already has 3 losses and still has to play Kentucky, which they will play Thursday night at Pauley Pavilion, Gonzaga, which they will play on the road in Spokane, and North Carolina, which they will play on December 19th at the CBS Sports Classic at the Barclays Center before Pac-12 play begins. Steve Alford's club has a legitimate chance to have 6 losses when it begins Pac-12 play. Just like last year, UCLA starting slow. It will be interesting to see if they can finish strong. Nugget number two, Purdue's P.J. Thompson, who has been absolutely sensational at point guard this season for the Boilermakers, has logged 126 minutes this season and doesn't have a single turnover. That's ridiculous. Thompson has 14 assists on the season. Nugget number three sends us to the Big 12, and look, I said after watching Texas practice in the preseason that for the Longhorns to get where they hope to go this year in Shaka Smart's first season at Austin, Isaiah Taylor was going to have to shoot less and pass more. Right now through 5 games, Isaiah Taylor leads Texas with 57 shot attempts, and the next closest teammate on Texas has 41 attempts. That's this discrepancy of Isaiah Taylor to the next person in line of 16 shots, and he plays the point guard position. That is not good for Texas basketball. Nugget number four, Michigan's Duncan Robinson, a transfer from Division III Williams, is currently third on the Wolverines in scoring at 9.3 points per game and is shooting 53% from the field and just under 58% from three. This is one of the better stories to keep your eyes on in college basketball, and it shows you that recruiting is definitely in an exact science. Nugget number five, Texas A&M's Tony Trocomorelos didn't make a single three-point shot last season. He was 0 of 5 from behind the three-point line. He's now 11 of 15 from deep this year for the Aggies, who I have said for quite some time right now are the SEC's version of Noah's Ark. They've got two of everything. And in December, Texas A&M will add another score in Kobe Eubanks. Don't be surprised if the Aggies are the top challenger to Kentucky in the SEC. Now let's take a look at what's going on social media. Question number one is from Musketeer Musings. Can Xavier legitimately compete for a Big East championship this year? I think the answer is yes. I've been bullish on Xavier since I saw them play Michigan as part of the Gavitt games. I think the interesting thing about Xavier, the depth that they have, and I was a little bit worried about what we saw from Xavier at the point guard position prior to the season, but Edmund Sumner has taken the ball and run with it. The redshirt freshman has been terrific so far for Chris Mack's team. Question number two, Oklahoma versus Villanova next week has Final Four possibilities. The two teams will play in Hawaii. What are your thoughts on that Monday matchup? Look, Villanova scheduled this game because it wanted to test itself more in December than it had been over the past couple years. It's going to be real interesting to see how they deal with a team on the perimeter that's just as explosive as they are. And if you watch Oklahoma, the triumvirate of Woodard, Heald, and Cousins lives up to the billing. Final question right now. Any thoughts on where West Virginia's ceiling might be this year, even though it's early? Look, I think West Virginia's a team that I ranked okay in the top 15 before the season. I think they proved against San Diego State that they're a legitimate top 15 team in the country. The question is, will the Mountaineers be as effective with their pressure when teams in conference play have the skill level to break that press with ease? Iowa State is Monte Morris. Kansas plays two point guards in Devontae Graham and Frank Mason, but will West Virginia be a top 15 or 20 team all year long? I think the answer is absolutely. And now we got to look at what we're going to take a look at this week.
Games to watch.
Games to watch. Games to watch. We start on Tuesday night. Purdue and Pitt in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. Again, the Panthers are undefeated, but how good are they? I just know this. I love this Purdue team. It's the deepest team that Matt Painter has ever coached. It's got great size with Hammonds and Haas inside, and it also has an all-star level glue guy in Caleb Swanigan, who's embracing his role for the Boilers. How can you not love Maryland and Carolina in Chapel Hill on Tuesday night as well? Marcus Paige back for the Tar Heels. This is a Final Four caliber game. Great perimeter matchup. Marcus Paige, Melo Trimble, Rashid Suleiman, Nate Britt, Joel Berry. Get your DVR ready now. Wednesday, Indiana and Duke. The Hoosiers in three games last week at the Maui Invitational in Hawaii let their opponents shoot a combined 47% from the field. If that happens against Duke, the Blue Devils will run away with this one with ease. But I will say this, Indiana can erase the losses last week to UNLV and Wake Forest with a road win on Wednesday at Cameron Indoor Stadium. Another game I'm looking forward to on Wednesday, Louisville and Michigan State. The Cards have pieces to be a sleeper in the ACC, but going against the Spartans in the Iz Zone is going to make them face a different breed of cattle. And one big thing that I took away from Michigan State's win Sunday night against Providence, you're starting to see more out of Deonta Davis, the talented freshman big man, and Aaron Harris has yet to play at the level which Michigan State expects him to play at, but he hit double figures against Providence. If Harris and Davis continue to produce, Michigan State again is going to be the team to beat in the Big Ten. And yes, I think that's ahead of Maryland. And on Thursday, the Blue Bloods will hook up at Pauley Pavilion when Kentucky takes on UCLA. Look, Kentucky is probably better in terms of overall ball security than they were last year. And for UCLA and Steve Alford, this is your time to draw your line in the sand and make a statement. UCLA is 4-3. Okay, they've had a couple of, you know, hiccups right now. They had a loss to Wake Forest in Maui. They had a loss to Monmouth at home. And UCLA, a lot of people think, are a year away because they're going to add Lonzo Ball and TJ Leaf. But the Bruins still have enough to be a top third team in the Pac-12 this season. And look, the Pac-12 needs to start making some hay in the non-conference portion of the schedule. Cal lost two games in Las Vegas over the weekend. They lost to Richmond. They also lost to San Diego State. Cal was thought to be a top 10 team. Utah, as we know, is a solid team that lost to Miami in Puerto Rico. And we saw Arizona look mortal, okay, over the weekend in California. And I said it at the start of the season. Nobody has more respect for the Wildcats program than me. But this was not vintage Arizona, and so far it hasn't looked like vintage Arizona. The Wildcats lost to Providence. Okay, they did sweep Boise State, and they needed overtime to beat Santa Clara. So if you're looking at the Pac-12 right now, you need to start to see teams like UCLA continue to start to win games. You need to see teams like UCLA really get into a situation where you're winning key games when you have the opportunity. We would like to thank Jim Larranaga for joining today's edition of the College Hoops Today podcast. And again, we want you to check us out on iTunes moving forward. I'm John Rothstein. We will be back next week. Enjoy the hoops, everybody.